You know, the question that I always start with, is, what book of the Bible are we in? Somebody said Romans, somebody said First Colossians. We are in Acts, but you also need to say it with a little more enthusiasm. It shouldn't be like, ugh, Acts. Yeah. Aren't we ever going to get, no. Then the next question, this is kind of your dust off your memory banks part of the morning. What chapter? Somebody's just mumbling in the back. We're in chapter 18. Now it's where it gets painful. Is Mark here? No, he was out trying to get a painting. He should be coming back. This is the painful question. Mark was teaching last week about the beginning of chapter 18. And the question is, what do you remember? What does anybody remember? Or how many of you were here last week? How many of you are not sure if you were here last week? I always say, if you're sitting in an empty chair, raise your hand. That's it. For those of you who were here or think you might have been here last week, who remembers anything that Mark said about the beginning of chapter 18 of Acts? And yes, this is an open book test.
God asked us to take a risk.
Taking a risk?
Paul's trusting God.
What's going on in the book of Acts at chapter 18? Yes, this is an open book test. So if you have a book, no shame in going back and taking a look. What's going on in this part of the book? Oh, what's the book of Acts about? Real quick, in one sentence.
The beginning of the church.
It's the church. How the church is spreading, how it's growing, how it's expanding. And it's continuing to do that down through to today. Chapter 18. No, Mark is walking in. Mark, I'm asking what people remember from your teaching last week. So
fear, faith, and trust.
Fear, faith, trust, taking risks. Rick? Yeah, lost wages. Yeah, the Apostle Paul is on his second missionary journey, someplace 51, 52, 53 A.D. He's traveling around the Mediterranean. This trip takes 3 to 4 years. He travels about 2,800 miles. Okay, imagine this is not 2,800 miles in a Ferrari either. This is on foot or by boat. It's a very arduous, very difficult, very challenging journey. And part of the question that we're always asking is, what lengths are you willing to go to? What lengths am I willing to go to for Jesus? Are we willing to go to those same lengths to take the gospel to the ends of the earth, just like Paul? Well, he gets to Athens, and then he travels about 50 miles south to Corinth. Athens was the center of knowledge. They worshiped the goddess Athena, the goddess of wisdom. And Corinth was the center of sensuality, sex and drugs and rock and roll. Okay. They worshipped Aphrodite, the goddess of sex, the goddess of love. And this is the challenge, really, of every age in history, people pursuing either knowledge or sensuality, either getting puffed up with how much you know or getting brought down by sex and drugs and rock and roll, okay. The flesh. So, I think Mark mentioned last time, there are two letters in the New Testament, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, written to this church in Corinth. And Ray Stedman, a former pastor here, always used to call it 1st and 2nd Californians. Right? That the situation in Corinth is very similar to that in modern California. How many of you, by the way, Barry? I don't know what you're talking about. Any struggling with sensuality, sex and drugs and rock and roll? I mean, worshiping the goddess of sex and love. I don't know, Andy. That's just an ancient thing. I mean, can anybody sort of relate to that? Okay. The problems that Paul faced are very similar to the ones that we face today. Yeah, there's some cultural differences and so forth, but the fundamental human problem is the same as Paul faced. When he went into the city of Corinth, he tells us later in 1 Corinthians, he says, I went there in weakness and in fear and with much trembling. That That's in 1 Corinthians 2:3. Somebody can check me on that. He arrived in that city of sensuality, debauchery, temple prostitutes, and he says, I showed up there in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. Does that fit your idea of the Apostle Paul, by the way? I mean, how do you think of the Apostle Paul, the mighty Apostle Paul?
The one that rebuked Peter, Simon Peter.
Who rebuked Peter to his face. He's traveling all over the Mediterranean. When you're thinking of Christian leaders, people who lead the church, and you think of the Apostle Paul, do you think of him as in weakness and in fear and in much trembling? Yeah, Marcus? I think, too, one of the things is God is always trying to bring us to the end of ourselves. If you think you can do it in your own strength, in your own, I can evangelize this city, I'm a gifted person, I've got it, you're in the wrong place. I need to be continually in that spot of, Lord, I'm weak, Lord, I've got some fears going on here, I'm in much trembling, you better show up, Lord, or this whole thing's going to be a mess. It all depends on you. That is real Christianity. Real Christianity is a continual reliance upon God, the indwelling presence of God, to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. Paul says, in my own self, I feel weak, I feel afraid, I feel in much trembling, but I know you're going to come through. And in fact, Paul had a vision, and I think Mark talked about it last week, and God basically said to him, do not be afraid. Or literally, stop being afraid. I am with you in this city that is so scary with all this debauchery, all this sensuality, all these aggressive people. I am with you. Now, how many of you can relate to being in fear, by the way? And weak, listen, and much trembling. And ultimately, my prayer for each of you, because I'm often in that place too, I step into some situations, I just don't know the answer, Lord. I just don't know the answer. And this could get real ugly, real fast. And to hear that voice from God telling you, you don't need to be afraid. Stop being afraid. I am with you. Continue moving forward into the things that I've called you to move into. Our natural desire, our natural response is what's called fight flight. Anybody ever, hit and run?
Hit and run.
When we get in a situation that's difficult, this body is wired for fight flight. I either have to punch the guy in the nose or I need to run and get some distance, and usually both. He who hits and runs away lives to hit another day kind of thing. That's the way we're wired. Get out of here. Get out of town. Retreat. And the Lord says to you, whatever you're fighting today, step forward into that thing that you're afraid of, trusting that He is with you and that He will show up to deliver you from whatever you've been fighting.
Yep.
He will show you the way. Okay. So, Paul has this vision. I'm with you. I'm with you, says the Lord. He stays in the city of Corinth, teaches for about a year and a half. I think that was probably about the last verse that Mark talked about. Oh, yeah, we are going to get to this. We don't know if that's Frank. I don't think it is. We're going to be looking at some things, at least in the first part, that have to do with being on trial. The Lord has just said, don't be afraid. And then guess what? As soon as, he's going to teach for a while, but he's going to end up in a bit of difficulty. Here's the second missionary journey, by the way. I think this thing has a little light. They start at the city of Antioch, cut through Turkey, come up here to Macedonia. Here's Athens, and then Corinth is where we currently are.
Where do they put Paul in jail?
Many places.
Just like you.
And here's a picture. Oh, if you want to get a kind of the visuals, what does ancient Corinth look like? Real nice. Looks kind of like California, by the way, the scenery around there, except for the temple columns. And just kind of give you some pictures of what ancient Corinth looked like. He says here, while Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, Ai, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him into court. This man, they charged, is persuading people to worship God in ways contrary to the law. Okay, bunch of confusing stuff there. Proconsul means governor. Achaia is the ancient word for Greece. While Gallio was governor of the Roman province of Greece. This kind of little, whatever this fragment here, this is actually something the archaeologists discovered that has Gallio's name in there. It's something from the Emperor Claudius who says, Gallio's my friend and he's the governor of Greece. So if you ever just think, well, the stuff in the Bible is just made up, there was no such person named Gallio, archaeology says, yes, there was. This is not fairy tale stuff. These are real people who really lived. He was the governor. It says the Jews made a united attack on Paul. The Lord has said to him, you don't need to be afraid. But guess what? There are still attacks. Do you think that when you become a Christian, this is a leading question, do you think life is going to be easy for you? How many do? Frank does. That somehow if you become a Christian, all your trouble, you don't need to be afraid, but I can guarantee you right now, all your troubles are not over, and in some ways they're just beginning. When you seek to live your life passionately for Jesus Christ, attacks are going to come. There are internal attacks and external attacks. External attacks are from unbelievers. Internal attacks are from within those who profess to be believers. And both kinds of things you are going to discover if you're a Christian and you start to be lived passionately for Jesus, you are going to get attacked. Anybody? No, Andy, I can't. How many of you have ever experienced something like that where you just sort of felt, gee, I gave my life to Jesus and I want to live for him and all of a sudden life got kind of rough? I thought it was supposed to be easy, but now I'm a Christian, I feel like all of a sudden I've got opposition. I am under attack. Nobody, by the way? Only Bruce. Anybody want to give an example? Yeah, Andy, isn't it? Yeah, Sergio? I mean, let's say you're coming out of your addiction and you used to hang out with a certain bunch of people and they're still in their addiction. And you go back to them and say, look, I've become a Christian. I'm in recovery. I'm working the steps, whatever. And all of a sudden they distance themselves from you and also perhaps even start, now you've become one of those Jesus freaks. A holy roller. If I needed a crutch, you do. But and all of a sudden, you suddenly feel under attack from people you used to just kind of hang out with and drink with and party with. They brought him, it says, into court. He's now on trial. Have any people here ever felt that you're on trial for your faith? Guess what? People are accusing you of stuff. You're doing stuff you shouldn't be doing, or you're doing stuff that's contrary. We'll talk about that in a second, contrary to the law. All of a sudden, you're going to find out, I'll tell you right now, when people find out you're a Christian, they're going to be watching your life like a hawk. They may not say much, some of them do. They're going to be, you call yourself a Christian. Let's see if you can live it. You can talk the talk, can you walk the walk kind of thing. But people are watching because you are now an example to them of what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And they're going to kind of put you on trial. They're going to evaluate you. No, you're a hypocrite. You know, all of a sudden you're going to find people are evaluating you, bringing you on trial, accusing you. That does, you're a Christian wouldn't do that. I get that all the time. People, you say you love me, but you do da-da-da-da. Somebody comes in my office. Andy, please, if the church would just give me $1 million, all my troubles would be over. And then when I say, no, I'm not going to give you $1 million, you call yourself a Christian, you say you love me, if you really love me, Andy, you're a hypocrite, and you feel like you're on trial. No, I'm not joking with you. I have people all the time. if you could just give me $1,700. What's that? 60. The idea is, I mean, a lot of times, by the way, we are here to help you with your whole life, of which the financial aspect is one part of that. And if people want us to help them with their whole life, yeah, we'll help you financially, but we're not just going to write you a check so you can take off down the road and spend it on methamphetamines or whatever. Okay. So, what's that? Darn it, so Robert's expressing some. Okay. Now, what this actually means here, this contrary to the law, the ancient Romans said existing religions are okay, but you cannot start a new religion. That was the law of the Roman Empire. The main religion was worship of Caesar, worship of the leader. But they allowed the Jews to continue. They said, you're an existing religion, so you can continue to have your Jewish religion. Now, the Jews, what they have done is they are saying Christianity is a new religion. And because it is a new religion, they are saying you are breaking the Roman law. They are attempting to get Christianity declared illegal. That's what's going on here. It isn't just attacking Paul. They're trying to get the judge, the governor, to say Christianity should be outlawed because it is breaking the laws of the Roman Empire. That's kind of what's on stake here. At stake. The worship of Caesar. Caesar, Julius Caesar, well, it's like with the ancient pharaohs. If you know your history, the pharaohs thought they were God incarnate, and you were supposed to worship the pharaoh. The same in Rome. They said, guess what, Frank? I am Caesar. You need to bow down and worship me. And that's what they did there in ancient Rome.
So did the Jews?
No. Because, again, the existing religions were allowed. Do any of you, by the way, think that, great, is this a problem today? Are there places in the world where Christianity is illegal? I just want to read you a couple things. Some of you got internet access. There's a thing called the Voice of the Martyrs, which gives basically weekly, monthly updates on where Christians are being persecuted in this world today. What's that? It's not legal there. There's an underground church that's flourishing. Ed can probably add on this one. I want to just read you a couple of little news things. This one's from Pakistan. It says, on October 6th, that's just last month, members of the Taliban sent threatening letters warning Christian leaders to convert to Islam or face dire consequences. If Christians refuse to accept the choices given to them, the letter explains, they will be killed, their property and homes will be burnt to ashes, and their women will be treated as sex slaves. Over the past 4 months alone, 12 Christians have been killed by Muslims due to their faith. And I'm sure could add, this is typical of the kinds of letters that are sent in Pakistan. Here, this is from Somalia, Mogadishu. It says, a member of Al-Shabaab, a Somali Islamic extremist group, have killed yet another of an underground church in Somalia. This pastor was returning home from a worship service when two masked members of Al-Shabaab ambushed and shot him. Al-Shabaab had previously declared Somalia as an Islamic state, vowing to eradicate Christians. Just this year, the group has killed a dozen Somali Christians. So this idea of, okay, persuading people it's against the law, this is current history. You know, praise God we live in this country. We don't have that. So we can gather here freely. People have said that there were more martyrs killed in the 20th century for their faith than in the first century. So whether you're looking around the world at China, whether you're looking at Mogadishu, whether you're looking at Pakistan, whether you're looking at many other places, we sometimes forget that we have brothers and sisters who are dying today. They are putting their life on the line today because they are being accused for their faith and being told you must renounce Christianity or die or suffer some other consequence. Like I said, the flip side of that is we should be very thankful that we can gather here today openly without that same fear. Thoughts before we kind of move on a bit? Going once?
Twice?
Twice?
Let's go back.
I couldn't find a picture of Galileo, so I decided to pick Judge Judy instead. Okay, so there's Paul. He's been dragged before the governor, who actually sits in a judgment seat in that city. And it says, just as Paul was about to speak, Gallio said to the Jews, if you Jews were making a complaint about some misdemeanor or serious crime, it would be reasonable for me to listen to you. But since it involves questions about words and names and your own law, settle the matter yourselves. I will not be judge of such things. So he had them ejected from his court. Then they all turned on Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and beat him in front of the court. But Gallio showed no concern whatever. Now, what's going on here? What happened? Not important to me. I'm throwing your case out. Paul is about to speak. I mean, accusations have been made. He's about to open his mouth. The judge just goes, I'm not even going to listen to your case. You're splitting hairs about your religion and your law. And you know what? I don't even want to deal with this stuff. You settle the matter yourselves. How many of you have ever had this? Rarely happens, but it does happen. You think you're going to have a big battle. You're being accused. You're on trial. And the thing just evaporates. In your own mind, you thought this was going to be some huge struggle. Paul's geared up to present a defense. And before the case even starts, it gets thrown out. Sometimes God shows up and fights the battle for you without your having to even open your mouth and utter a sound. And this is one of those amazing cases. Yeah, there was a hand up back there.
I had that experience happen to me just a couple weeks ago. When I went to Florida, all my felonies got squashed, and my first strike got taken off. You know, that was a message to God. Only He could have done that.
Yeah. The God can work through the heart of those who are accusing you. God can change the hearts of the rulers so that they let you off the hook. And sometimes even strange things happen. I heard Chuck Smith, some guy came up to him, was all angry with, some of you may know he's the head of Calvary Chapel down in Southern California. And the guy said, I have a word from God, you're going to be dead next week. Okay? And Chuck was about to say something, but then he said, you know what, I'm not even going to say a word. I'm not even, okay, this guy claims to have a prophecy from God. Well, you know what? That guy died in a car accident that week, and Chuck Smith did his funeral. Okay? Sometimes you don't need to defend yourself as much as you may think that you do. God has a way of doing stuff. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to sweat it. Yeah, Bruce?
You know, I think it's interesting if you go back to Mark's thing he was talking about here, no man will attack you nor an army, for I have many people. I mean, like when you're in the middle of something, you think everybody's going to, there's some of those who are going to be God's people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times when you're going through stuff, when I'm going through stuff, I feel I'm alone. And God says, you know what, I have many people in this city. You may feel like it's you against the world, but I have many people here to support you. Well, he throws the whole case out of the court. Now, what's this deal about? They all turned on Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and beat him. He's the synagogue. Let's say we couldn't get Paul, so let's beat up Sosthenes. Sosthenes, come here. He's the head of the synagogue. He was the guy who was supposed to present the case to Gallio. He was the synagogue. We got all these guys saying, Okay, let's say Rick is actually Sosthenes. Rick, you take the lead on the legal case. We want Paul tried and convicted. All of a sudden, the court case gets thrown out. Everybody turns on Rick saying, you blew the legal case. If you'd done a better job, we would have gotten Paul convicted. So everybody started. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, he's the scapegoat. Sosthenes is the guy who's going to take the fall. We wanted to get Paul. We couldn't get him, so I guess you're going to have to do. Well, they were bringing him to the Roman court. They were charging him of breaking...
How can a Jew arrest a Roman?
Well, they didn't arrest him. They made charges against him on that. Now, I want to read you one verse. Okay, this is the very first verse in 1 Corinthians. This is the letter to the church in Corinth. It's Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and our brother Sosthenes. Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and our brother Sosthenes. Sosthenes was the ruler of the synagogue. Well, no, he turns out eventually to become a believer, a follower of Jesus Christ. So somewhere along the way, he got beaten up. And then we don't know his story, but somewhere in the midst of that, he became a Christian. Now, does that mean that we should beat people? I mean, there are different styles of evangelism. In Sosthenes' case, he got beaten up by a bunch of people. And somewhere along the line, as we find out at the very beginning of 1 Corinthians, he then joined Paul, became a believer, and he's one of the saints in the early church. So, Gallio showed no concern whatsoever. So they're beating the guy up outside the courthouse, and Gallio says, okay, I told them to settle the matter themselves. I guess that's the way they're doing it. They're not going to arrest him on an assault charge. All right, other thoughts, comments, criticisms, observations? Yeah, these were the people I thought I was a part of. Now they've beaten me up, and perhaps that caused them to begin reflecting on the truth of Paul's claims.
Sure.
Yeah, Larry?
In verse 8 it says, Chris was the leader of the synagogue, and then in verse 17 it says, Sosthenes the leader of the synagogue.
No. I think if you look somewhere in there, it says that Crispus got converted and became a believer. And I think Sosthenes is then his replacement. And then Sosthenes gets converted. So, yeah, so I think there's, no, they're not the same guy, the two different guys. Yeah. Okay.
So it's safe to say that you can actually beat somebody into the submission of Christ.
That's exactly what I don't want you to get is the conclusion of my... What did you learn in church this morning? I learned we should just beat people to a pulp and maybe they'll come to Jesus. Please do not go out of here today saying that that was the message the pastor was proclaiming. Yeah, Dan? Yeah. Yeah. So, good point. It's not the Christians who are beating him, so that's not an example to us of what... I know next week we're going to come back in here and somebody's going to say, I thought that's what you told me to do. And as I'm visiting you over at Elmwood somewhere. Isn't that a kind of attractive head there? Now, I'm going to get you a couple of weird verses here that people always ask about. It says, Paul stayed on at Corinth for some time, which is to say the trial ended and he continued staying there. He didn't just leave town. He stayed there for some time. Then he left the brothers and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. Before he sailed, he had his hair cut off at Cenchreae, which is the port city of Corinth, because he had taken a vow. Okay, so he hangs out there in the city after the court case is over. Then he decides, okay, it's time for me to be moving on with this missionary journey. I want to sail to Syria, ultimately get back to Antioch where he started. And he hops on the boat with Priscilla and Aquila that Mark, I think, talked about last week. And it says he had his hair cut off because he'd taken a vow. So he does the haircut thing. What in the world do you think that's all about? Take a shot at it. Lice. Lice. Okay, so we have the lice theory. Yeah, Marcus?
Yeah, he was actually showing God his gratitude.
And it says he'd taken a vow. That means he'd made a promise. And it let me get a couple of people hopping. Brian, you had a hand up back there? You're scratching. Okay, that looks... Yeah, Dan? Yeah, there's a thing in... And somebody can check this out. I think it's in Numbers. The book of Numbers in the Bible. 32? Chapter 30, verse 2. It's a thing called a Nazirite vow. And in that culture, if you wanted to have thankfulness, you would not drink for a month and you'd not cut your hair for a month.
Okay. Drink what?
Water? Wine. Wine. Alcohol. Anybody in here relate to that? Okay. So, no, this was just something they would temporarily say, I'm going to abstain from the pleasures of this world, and I am going to focus entirely on God. I'm not going to worry about haircuts and manicures and pedicures. I am just going to focus on God, to thank God for what he's done. Now, to us, it may be kind of a strange-sounding vow, but for Paul, it would have been very meaningful. This is the way I show thanks to God, is I'm going to abstain from pleasure, and I'm going to focus entirely on the Lord, and I'm going to thank him for the work that he's done in the city of Corinth.
The court work.
The court work and the growth of the church.
Okay.
So he's been there a year and a half, probably even close to two, and he says, you know what, I want to thank God for everything that's been accomplished here in Corinth. And this is the way in his Jewish upbringing that he would have done that. Now, some of you may have certain cultural things. My wife, for example, has an Advent wreath. Anybody here have an Advent wreath? Okay. An Advent wreath? And it's like a wreath that has four candles on it. And the 4 weeks before Christmas, the first week she'll light one candle, then two, then three, then four, kind of an Advent thing. And for her, that's very, very meaningful. And because she comes from Germany, that's really... It's nothing in the Bible that says you have to have an Advent wreath. It's something you can do or not do, but for my wife, it's very meaningful. And there may be certain things for you that you have that same sense of freedom. It's meaningful to me. Yeah, Mark? Okay, it says... Okay, well, as my father always said, who was completely bald, when you get all the hair out, you can think more clearly. So I don't know if that, you know. Hey, Larry, I'll get you next, Marcus. You know what? Who'd be willing to do more research? And Marcus can do more research. Go ahead, Marcus.
1 Samuel 1:11, Judges 13:5. It was a Nazarite vow. It was a Nazarite vow. It was out of respect and gratitude for God.
I tell Tell you what, whoever wants to do more research, do it this week, and we'll see if we can pick it up next week.
Hey.
Okay, let me kind of finish this part off. Whoa. They arrived at Ephesus. That's over on the coast of western coast of Turkey, where Paul and Priscilla, Paul left Priscilla and Aquila. He himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to spend more time with them, he declined, but as he left, he promised, I will come back if it is God's will. Then he set sail from Ephesus. He's going to come back later. We'll find out in Acts 20. He spends 3 years in Ephesus. That's an early sculpture that some people thought was of Paul.
He didn't make a commitment. He said, if it's God's
will. If it's God's will. And it turned out to be on the third missionary journey. There's a picture of Ephesus, by the way. If you want to know what it looks like. Great library there. So it's a pretty... It looks like your house. Okay. It says, when he landed at Caesarea... I'm kind of finishing this off quickly. He goes over here to Ephesus, then he sails from Ephesus, gets back to Caesarea. He went up and greeted the church. That's probably at Jerusalem. Then he went down to Antioch, which is where he started his second missionary journey. So he's completing the second missionary journey and traveled from place to place throughout the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Anyway, that's the conclusion of the second missionary journey. Now, I'm going to start something new for just 1 minute. If you leave here today, which you probably will unless you decide to sleep here, and somebody asks you, what was the sermon about this morning? What do you think you might remember? Lice? Somebody's going to remember lice? What is something you might take away from this morning? God intervening, when maybe you think that it's going to be a big deal, God sometimes just has things evaporate. It was going to be a big court case, and it turned into just nothing. Marcus? We can show. We just had Thanksgiving. By the way, anybody know the word Eucharist? If you come out of a Catholic background, the Eucharist is the word for communion. Eucharistia is the Greek word for thanksgiving. So that was the early church. That was their thanksgiving. Other things? Anything you might take away from today? Yeah, let me get ladies first. Johnsy? Stepping out in faith. When you've got fear and God's telling you, keep moving forward into it. Don't run from it. I am going to be there with you, even though there's going to be attacks and battles. I'm going to be with you. Keep moving forward. Don't run from it. And somebody, Dan had a hand up. Faith? Let me get last one, Frank.
What Jesus says, take away with that, do not be afraid. That's what I said.
Do not be afraid. There's a lot of things that are pretty fearful for all of us. And it said, and not the good fist fight after court. I'm going to leave it there. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Andy. All right.